Stand by. Transmitting sound. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, how you doing? We've got a busy show, including speaking with our pop culture expert, Eve Thomas, about some high-end Valentine's Day gift ideas, as well as some more affordable options so that you don't necessarily have to break the bank unless you want to. I also chat with award-winning veterinarian Dr. Kristen Nelson about her book called Coated with Fur, A Vet's Life. She's got some amazing animal stories to tell, as well as what pet best suits your family's needs. All this plus a hot remix from Mariah Carey. Lots to do. Let's go.
Capture your need for sound.
As you know, here on the Kelly Alexander Show, I try to keep you up to date with not only what's going on in the world around us, but also things that are happening in my life in case they can relate to you or, you know, be of service to you in any way with some of the things that I go through. Because I think a lot of us share a common, you know, human existence. I don't think any of the problems or issues or even good times that I go through are different than what you guys go through as well. But, you know, I try to relate the stories to sort of make sure that we all have a connection going on. And in the last couple of weeks, I've actually been a little bit stressed because of a situation that happened with my grandmother. You actually got to meet her for the first time just before Christmas. I had her on the show, Grandma Alexander. She talked about her career as an organist at our little community church. And I was, you know, ecstatic to have her on the show because she was a little bit shy about doing it. But I was so happy that she agreed to be on the show and explain this amazing career that she's had as this church organist for, you know, over 60 years. Anyway, a couple of weeks ago, we got a surprise when my grandmother ended up having a heart attack. And I know that that's, you know, not shocking for a lot of people. People in their, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, can end up with heart attacks. But I guess if I explain the situation a little bit better, my grandmother is in her late 80s. And first of all, she looks like she's in her 70s. She looks fantastic. And I guess I credit that to her active lifestyle where she's outside and in the summer doing all of her flowers in the garden and all that sort of good stuff. But we've never seen my grandmother sick, apart from having, you know, the occasional cold or stomach flu. I've never seen my grandmother sick. And she was an amazing caregiver for my grandfather when he went through his 10-plus years of problems until he unfortunately passed away. So she's been a rock in the family for as long as I can remember. We've called her Super Grandma since I was a kid. So to see her have a heart attack, as you can imagine, scared me quite a bit. And so the reason I'm sort of sharing the story is, I'll sort of outline what happened. And then I kind of wanted to sort of put forth a few things that I think a lot of us forget about when it comes to elderly members of the family. So anyway, just sort of a quick roundup. I was at work at the radio station and I got a call that my grandmother was being rushed to the emergency room with what they thought at the time was a heart attack. So as you can imagine, I bolted out of work and headed straight to the hospital. And as I was on my way there, I got a phone call from my brother telling me, because he had been in the ambulance with my grandmother, that apparently it was not a heart attack and it was not a stroke. So that made me feel, you know, immensely much, much better. So I still made my way to the hospital. And when I got there, you know, my grandmother didn't look too bad. She looked tired, but they actually had her in the waiting room. And so at this point, because, you know, we'd been assured that she didn't have a heart attack or a stroke, that, you know, I thought maybe it was a really bad case of, you know, the stomach flu or, you know, or the flu in general. So anyway, I waited with her and my aunt in the waiting room for about 3 hours. And, you know, I was getting frustrated because, you know, she is an elderly woman and I didn't really want her in this emergency waiting room with everyone else hacking up a lung and her being around that. But eventually they managed to see her. And the thing that was shocking was in about 10 minutes, they actually realized that she did, in fact, have a heart attack. When she explained her symptoms, I guess it raised some red flags and, you know, they gave her an EKG. And within like 5 minutes of them doing that EKG test, they realized that she'd had a heart attack 6 hours earlier. And I guess my first point here is the fact that when I had heard about her symptoms, they were sort of, I guess to me, borderline, you know, could have been a heart attack. But I don't know about you, and I'm sure some of you know better, but I had always heard that heart attacks, you either felt, you know, this pain in your left arm or actually on the left side of your chest. But my grandmother described the pain as having started in her shoulders. And it was only later that I find out that with women, you can actually start to have a heart attack with pain in your shoulders, pain in your back, and sort of symptoms like that. So I had no idea. I actually really did think she had maybe come down with a bad case of the flu. So the thing that was upsetting is that obviously they had let her sit in the waiting room for 3 hours when they could have been diagnosing her much earlier. She could have gotten treatment much earlier. But the cardiologist, who received her when she came into emergency, the way that her symptoms presented themselves, I guess, could have A, been a heart attack, or B, the flu, and he chose not to pursue it. So, you know, that was very upsetting, but at least at this point, the ball was rolling. And it was, you know, the care that she got was amazing once they finally, you know, took stock of the situation. So she was rushed off to the Cardiology Institute here in Montreal, and everything sort of went very quickly, and she was handled very well by the doctors and nurses in that institute. And within an hour, she'd had the operation that she needed to unblock the artery, which was the problem, and then was being sent back to the hospital. Anyway, as you can imagine, it was a roller coaster of emotions going on with me, because, you know, first it was, yep, she has a heart attack. Nope, she doesn't have a heart attack. Yep, she did, in fact, have a heart attack. And now we're rushing her in an ambulance, you know, to go have an operation. So, you know, I stayed strong and everything, but it was very tough to see my grandmother, you know, in a hospital bed and sort of being taken away in this ambulance. But I have to say, my grandmother was a rock star. I never saw her cry once. She never even looked frightened. She was very, very calm about the whole thing. And so I'm extremely proud of her for that. I think it was more of us that were upset than she was. But anyway, all that to say is that she got the care she needed. She was in the hospital for about 2 or 3 days after the operation to monitor her progress. And they couldn't believe that she was up and around walking and doing, you know, wonderfully. And, so she has since been sent home and everything should be good. She's obviously on some medication now to sort of monitor the situation, but her artery has been dealt with. According to the doctor, her other arteries are fantastic. They can't believe that for a woman in her 80s, she's actually doing that well. So, you know, we're very lucky that she's still with us. But the reason that one of the reasons I wanted to share the story with you is that I'm sure you have parents or grandparents in your life where they don't want to be a bother. and that is my grandmother to a T. She doesn't want to bother anyone. And she does live independently. But as we've discussed before, we have the Alexander family farm. So my parents live on the farm and she's in another house on the farm as well. So, you know, I suppose walking from my parents' house to her house would take about 2 minutes. So, you know, she does live independently in her own house. But at least she does have my dad and my mother nearby. But the thing is, like, again, she doesn't ever want to bother anybody. And she does always come off as this very strong woman. And I think we have, you know, to a degree forgotten that she is, you know, approaching 90, you know. And this sort of brought it all home. Now, again, we do check on her all the time. We always see her out in the garden in the summer. You know, there's someone in her house at least once or twice a day to make sure she's okay. But I think she'd actually been feeling poorly for a couple of months and didn't really tell us. I don't think she knew herself what was going on, but she didn't really tell, you know, myself or my dad or my brother or my sister or my aunts that she was feeling sort of more tired. So that was a bit of a shock. And then the other thing is that, you know, when she started to experience this extreme shoulder pain, it was around midnight. And This is sort of the weirdest thing out of all of this. She actually knew she was having a heart attack. her own mother years and years ago had gone through a similar episode in the symptoms that she got and then with the progression to the heart attack. So my grandmother had witnessed this, you know, decades ago and was fairly certain she was having a heart attack. But because it was midnight, she didn't want to call my dad or call my aunts. So she just sort of stayed there, like in her bed, you know, the whole night as her symptoms got worse. Again, it started with this severe shoulder pain. And then she got some numbness in her face, which again was another symptom that I had no idea of. And then it progressed in the morning hours to nausea and vomiting. And that's sort of the only time when my aunt, who had come to see her, and again, who checks on her every day, notice that something obviously was off. And by this point, my grandmother didn't sort of turn down the opportunity to go to the hospital. Before that, she was like, "Nah, I'm okay." But then I guess once the nausea and the vomiting sort of happened, she was like, "Yeah, okay, I guess we should go." And she actually agreed to go in the ambulance. But the whole thing out of all of this is that we had no idea. We had no idea. And apparently, you know, since the heart attack, she's let me know, because we've had sort of in-depth conversations about it, that she has actually had a bit of numbness in her face in the last couple of months. And she just thought it was whatever, old age or whatever you want to call it. And obviously that was actually like beginning symptoms of having this heart attack, with having her artery blocked. So I guess my thing here is that if you have an elderly person in your life who is fairly independent and sort of does their own thing, maybe it's time that you start paying a little bit more attention to them and actually really, really seeing how they are. Because my grandmother, in a way, had us all fooled, and I don't really want to put it that way, because I don't think she meant to keep information from us. But I also think we took for granted that she's been this strong woman, you know, her whole life, and we didn't maybe check in a bit more. Because I've seen her in the last couple of months at times looking a bit tired. But then, you know, I sort of said to myself, well, you know, she's almost 90. Like, why wouldn't she be tired? I'm tired, and I'm less than half her age. So my thing is if this sets off any red flags for you with people in your life that you need to sort of check up on a little bit more, please do so. And the thing also, if you are someone who is caring for an elderly person, please don't hesitate to also ask for help, because, you know, my dad and my aunts are the ones that check in on my grandmother the most, even though, like, I try to call her at least once or twice a week. But I don't get to see her, you know, more than at least once a week or once every 2 weeks. So I don't get to see the day-to-day progress that she's going through. But for a caregiver, you know, they need the extra help. And so, for example, I also have realized that my grandmother hasn't been eating properly. You know, my mother is kind enough to send down food, I would think, two or three times a week. But again, because my grandmother is so self-sufficient, we thought that she was still sort of making herself decent meals. But it turns out that she's eating. She's totally eating, because my aunt makes sure that, you know, she has groceries, but she's not cooking to the degree that we thought she was. So, for example, this past weekend, I made sure to bring her some homemade soup. And, you know, I'm going to start doing more of that stuff, and along with my mother, because I don't want my mother to have the whole burden of trying to provide her with extra food. So if you are a caregiver, please ask for help, because, you know, what you do for your family member is amazing. I am so in awe of people like my mother, who not only sort of helps out my grandmother, who, by the way, is her mother-in-law, it's not even her mother, but my mother also checks on at least two or three other elderly people in our community throughout the month. And I just see that, you know, it does take a lot of effort to do that and to be there for elderly people, because, again, they don't often tell you what's going on. So I just want to give a shout out to caregivers. And if you need help, you know, please ask your other family members to do so, because sometimes I think a lot of us are so, you know, in our own world and wrapped up in the things that we do each and every day that we don't, you know, often maybe cast a glance at all the work that you're doing. So please do ask for help. And again, with regards to elderly members in your family, please make sure that you're checking in on them just a little bit more, because I think sometimes they don't want to bother us. In fact, I know they don't want to bother us. And they think that, you know, younger people have way more important things to do than check in on them. And so please remember that having an elderly person in your life is just amazing. I probably cried about four or five times in and around the heart attack. Like, obviously not near her. I didn't want to upset her. But I just love my grandmother so much. And she's been an amazing, almost like, you know, she is my grandma and my mom's amazing. So it's not that I needed another mother figure, but she kind of is, because there's certain things that I can talk to my grandmother about that I still don't want to talk to my mother about, you know, even though I'm not a teenager anymore. So I just want to make sure that, you know, if you have someone in your life that you love that much, that you pay attention to them, tell them how much you love them, and make sure that they know that they're still valued, because I think sometimes they think that they're just not that important anymore. So that's my big sort of soapbox speech for the day. And again, I did want to let you know that Grandma is doing much better, and I hope to have her on the show in the next little while to tell you herself how she's doing, because I think it's important if she sort of shares her viewpoint on what she was going through, because she, you know, I sort of read her the riot act after all this when I found out that she hadn't, you know, called at least my dad, or, you know, in the middle of the night, when, because at one point she had problems breathing. That was one of the symptoms that she had. And I said, Grandma, like, why didn't you call dad? Like, you know, he would come immediately. And she's like, well, you know, your dad works so much, I didn't want to wake him from his sleep. And you know, as much as that's a kind thought, I mean, she knew she was having a heart attack. So it just, you know, it speaks volumes that she cares about her family that much. But we need to care, you know, as much about her. And again, I think that's a universal problem or issue around the world with parents and grandparents, that we need to take care of them. So thank you so much for letting me sort of rant on about this. It's been actually cathartic, because I haven't really ran through all the things or the timeline, you know, since it happened, because it's been a little bit stressful dealing with everything. But I'm glad to share the story. And again, if anyone can take something away from this, I am very happy. So again, thank you so much for always entertaining me right here on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Grandma's hands clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's hands played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hand used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast, might fall on a piece of glass, might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's hand, Grandma's hand soothed the local unwed mother. Grandma's hand used to ache sometimes and swell. Grandma's hand used to lift her face and tell her, she'd say, baby, Grandma, understand that you really love that man, put yourself in Jesus' hands. Grandma's hand, Grandma's hand used to hand me a piece of candy. Grandma's hand picked me up each time I fell. Grandma's hand, boy, they really came in a handy. She'd say, Matty, don't you whip that boy, what you wanna spank him for? He didn't drop no apple core, but I don't have Grandma anymore. If I get to heaven, I'll look for Grandma's hand.
Valentine's Day is upon us, and there's so many things to think about what you will do for your mate. To help us have some fun and show you both the over-the-top gift ideas as well as economical ones is our pop culture expert Eve Thomas, an assistant editor at Luxury Brands, as well as writing for sweetspot.ca. Eve, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Hi, good to be here.
So here's the deal. Let's start with a lot of people's favorite indulgence, I think at any point of the year, but also, you know, on Valentine's Day, chocolate. So Eve, what have you got going on with chocolate for Valentine's Day?
Well, despite my work in luxury brands, I'm really a simple girl, and chocolate is a bit cliched, but I think it's you know, it's a classic gift for a reason. So, as anyone who reads Kathy comics can tell you, women love chocolate. My recommendation is a dessert called the Frozen Haute, H-A-U-T-E, chocolate from a New York shop called Serendipity 3. You may have heard of it. Your listeners may have heard of it. It's a cafe tucked away on East 60th. It's one of Oprah's favorite things, and it's been featured in movies and TV shows, and it's on, like, New York City bus tours. The frozen hot chocolate dessert, it's made out of 28 cocos from around the world. It's infused with 5 grams of edible 23-karat gold, and it's served in a goblet lined with edible gold. And at the base of the goblet is an 18-karat gold bracelet with 1 carat of white diamonds. And then it's topped with whipped cream, more edible gold, and a truffle from a Nipschult chocolatier, which sells for $2,600 a pound. And also you eat it with, of course, a gold spoon, and that's covered in chocolate-covered diamonds, which, of course, is yours to keep or to send into Dollars for Gold, if that's your thing. So,
wow.
You know, it's just a little chocolatey treat for your loved one. And it goes for $25,000.
$25,000.
You have to call ahead.
I'm assuming you'd have to call ahead. That's crazy. But that, you know what, it's so fun, Eve, to sort of just see – I guess, as my dad would put it, how the other half lives, you
Yeah.
know, and it's cool to think that someone could actually afford that. And Oprah, I know, could afford that. You know, that's probably like her lunch bill. But
I think it's more how the other 0.01%,
exactly.
I hope.
You're right, that's so true. Now for us regular folk, what can you give us with regards to chocolate? Because like you said, it's a common everyday occurrence, you know, to be able to get chocolate, but I do think it adds to that whole love theme.
Well, Serendipity 3 also offers a cheap dessert that's only $1,000. It's
Okay,
called
that's the
Golden
cheap one.
Opulence. Other than that, you can also get their hot chocolate mixes online, and they're about $20. I have not tasted them. I don't know if they're as good, and obviously, you need to add your own edible, odorless, flavorless gold. But if you're really into luxury, you really have to look at quality rather than flash. And it's funny because every time I meet a chef in my line of work, I'll ask them about their favorite ingredients or their favorite tools like kitchen knives and things like that. And recently, I was actually taking a lesson with a French chef in the south of France, and we made a chocolate dessert. So I asked him, I was like, okay, if you had $1 million and you could buy any chocolate you wanted for this dessert, which one would you buy? And he said Lindt chocolate, which sells for about $3 to $5 a bar. So that should probably tell you something.
That's fantastic. And Lindt is amazing. I love that stuff. I always, especially like around Christmas when they have the little sort of Christmassy editions of Lindt, I'm totally all over that. So that's awesome. Now, Eve, moving along, flowers are the trusty item, I guess, on Valentine's Day. How can you sort of spice that up, you know, spice up that simple bouquet from the, God forbid, the corner store?
Well, if you're not going to get carnations or baby's breath, you might as well go whole hog and get some orchids, which have grown a lot in popularity in North America. They're hard to take care of. But more specifically, I'd recommend a Malaysian orchid called the Gold of Kinabalu. It's also known as Rothschild Slipper. Technically, it's endangered, and technically, it can take 15 years to flower and costs about $5,000 a stem. But I mean, on Valentine's Day, you know, money should be no object, over a decade of waiting. There's also this orchid, I don't know the exact name, but it was created by a Chinese agricultural research center about 5 or 6 years ago, and an anonymous bidder paid $200,000 for the flower.
Wow.
So that's your bar.
That's crazy. And then again, for us here on the other side of the fence.
Well, if you can't go that far, my favorite thing to do, and I've sort of been obsessed with these for a couple of years now, is terrariums, which you may have made as a kid in school, and they're back, and they're all over sites like Etsy and home decorating sites. They're very clean and hip. You can make your own. You can just get some charcoal and some moss and put in a little cute figurine or even a little plant into a mason jar. Or you can go on a site like Etsy and you can buy one ready made, and they're great because you know they won't be affected by winter drafts. They last forever. You have to water them about once a month, if that. And they're pretty gender neutral too. They look cute on anybody's desk.
Wow, that's fantastic. I really like that idea because I think it does, even if you're like, you know, because one time I actually did a test and I actually walked in to a flower store around, I want to say like 3:30 or 4 on Valentine's Day. And I don't remember what day it was of the week, but I want to say it was like a Wednesday or a Thursday that this particular year a few years ago. And it was like watching a science project, like seeing all these men like flurrying around the store and madly trying to prick, you know, pick up the last remnants, like you said, of baby's breath and paying a mint for it. And so I think that for men out there, this is like a cool idea because it's you know, yes, it's flowers or you know, something in that vein, but it's showing that you've thought a little bit outside the box. So I think that's awesome. Good idea. And Eve, you know, I know that there's a lot of people that would go totally over the top when it comes to jewelry, and I'm sure you found some nice nasty stuff for us about that and like how crazy people can go with jewelry.
No. They're just two little simple pieces that, you know, 3 months' salary, 3 years' salary will get you.
Okay.
One is the Chopard blue diamond ring, which goes for about $16.26 million. Blue diamonds are actually really rare colored gems. They come from boron deposits, which are also really rare. Think the Hope diamond. So it's a ring with a pavé set diamond band in 18 karat white gold. And if you add it up, it gets to about $1.7 million per carat.
Wow.
And then also Harry Winston's $8.5 million earrings. You probably know Harry Winston from the Oscars. The company basically gives millions and millions of dollars of jewelry for all the stars to wear on the red carpet and, you know, has their security guards standing by to make sure they don't get stolen. In 2006, the House of Winston created a pair of diamond drop earrings that are two pear-shaped diamonds in a platinum setting, totaling 60.1 carats. They're actually available if you want at their shop on Rodeo Drive, but you should probably call first just in case it's been bought. And, you know, if you want to go a bit downscale, they also have some similar pairs for, you know, about $30,000. So
that's nothing for most of us. That's like ordering pizza. There you go. Now, my next question actually scares me. Like, I'm scared to sort of ask this, but when it comes to the lingerie department, I just feel, and this is why I'm scared, because I feel like this is an area that could either go really well or really badly. So what do you have for us? Because and men, pay attention to what Eve is telling you right now.
Well, the cliche, of course, is that it's a gift you're giving someone else that's really for yourself, which, you know, is pretty true. Also, you know, you have to think about what state your relationship is in. Is it too early to give them something so intimate? There's also the sizing, which, I mean, bra sizes are confusing enough for women. So for a guy to get something that's actually the right size, and really, anything that's too big or too small is going to be perceived as an insult. But if you want to go to the top of luxury, I recommend a little brand called Victoria's Secret. Everyone knows it. But of course, I recommend the Fantasy Bra series, which was started in 1996. And these are the ones that they show every year. These are basically the publicity stunts. So the first one was the $1 million miracle bra, and that was worn by Claudia Schiffer. It's actually also the only one that was ever sold. I think the rest of them are just there for show. It featured 100 carats of diamonds and semi-precious gemstones. And then the Heavenly Star bra worn by Heidi Klum, it's worth $12.5 million. It featured 1,200 pink sapphires and more than 2,300 diamonds. But if you want something ridiculously expensive that you might actually wear outside of Las Vegas, you could try Agent Provocateur,
okay,
which sells silk kimonos for about $2,600, and bras started around $200, and there's a lace slip for about $500, so, you know, really affordable. My real recommendation, not that I don't think those are all great ideas, my real recommendation is either don't get them lingerie at all, or take her on a shopping spree, basically, and let her pick out stuff for herself. It'll be fun. Putting in the time will show that you really care. Or you can do what my boyfriend did and get her a Snuggie or a blanket, which is just as good.
Wow, that's awesome. And I you know what, I think you have a really good idea there, because, like, you know, we just spoke about moments ago, this could go really well or really badly. And if you're on the cusp of not being certain, I think it's best, mm-hmm. like you said, to take her shopping. And again, that's showing initiative, that's showing that you want to spend money and that you want to be with her while she's picking stuff out. So I think that's awesome. Now, Eve, I kind of find this totally interesting, and I'm not sure why. I guess it's because I wouldn't normally think of these things as Valentine's Day gifts. But I guess now that we're moving, you know, full on into hardcore technology the last couple, it's been that way for many years, but now it's like all about the gadgets. What do you have going on with gadgets? And is this really the time of year to be giving that to a loved one?
Well, this is also a bit of a tricky area, because to a lot of people, giving someone an iPod is pretty impersonal and not very romantic. But I think, you know, this applies to Valentine's Day or to Christmas or to any sort of holiday where you've got to get something for your romantic partner. So I, of course, recommend a gold-plated iPhone from a company called Gold Striker. It's a British luxury goods company that basically they'll dip anything in gold or platinum and decorate it with Swarovski crystals and diamonds, like literally anything. They've got a platinum-coated iPad for about $5,000.
Good God. That's crazy.
I know. They sell a 55-inch flat-screen TV decorated with alligator skin, solid gold, and 48 round-cut diamonds for about $2 million. And they've got, this is my favorite, they've got a gold-plated Wii video game console for about $600,000. I mean, obviously things might get a bit tricky in about 5 months when you need to upgrade or the technology becomes totally obsolete.
This is crazy. This is for people that have way too much money on their hands and just have run out of time buying cars. You know what I mean? Like, this is just, that's insane. And then what do you say to us people who would like to not be be broke and in jail somewhere?
Well, like you said, definitely consider if this is the message you want to send. Even if your boyfriend or girlfriend needs an iPod or really likes video games, you've got to ask yourself, is this something that they want, or is it something that they're really going to love getting from you? So either give it with something else, or, you know, you can personalize it. Like, so if you give someone an iPod, you can engrave it for cheap or even for free if you buy it online. Or, you know, do something like fill it up with a romantic playlist or something like that. So you're not just giving them a piece of sort of technology and just saying, here, you know. You know, you might as well be giving them cash, basically.
Right, right.
I'm also a huge convert to the Xbox Kinect, which is, it lets you play video games with your body instead of controllers. And I swear, you know, I'm not shilling for them. This is totally my personal experience. It goes for about $150 on top of the price of an Xbox. And the best part about it is it's a good workout, and it's really futuristic. It's basically like Tron or Minority Report. It's so cool, but also it really works for both men and women. Like, I was playing it the other week, and I watched a friend of mine who's about 90 pounds soaking wet just wipe the floor with her boyfriend in virtual boxing. So it's not something that, you know, certain couples, you know, you don't have to worry about your boyfriend hogging it and playing it for hours and hours. A lot of women really like it.
That's really,
really
cool.
Really good at it.
That's really cool. And I think that's actually like a good, you know, together activity, especially for right now, because a lot of people don't want to head outside. So I think that's actually something really cool. Eve, you've been fantastic. Like, thank you so much for all of this. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I hope everyone takes my ideas to heart.
That's awesome. That is Eve Thomas, assistant editor of luxury brands at Spa Facts. She's also a contributing writer for sweetspot.ca. She also blogs at theoreticalshopaholic.tumblr.com and is our very own expert on pop culture right here on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Behold the way our fine feathered friend his virtue doth parade. Thou knowest not, my dim-witted friend, the picture thou hast made. Thy vacant brow and thy tousled hair conceal thy good intent. Thou noble, upright, truthful, sincere, and slightly dopey gent, you're my funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine. You make me smile with my care for me. Stay
is your mouth a little weak when you open it to speak? Are you smart?
Such an important part of our life. They make us smile, give us energy, and provide us with tons and tons of unconditional love. That's why it's very important for us to show them love as well, not to mention compassion, and to take good care of them. Someone who does just that is award-winning veterinarian Dr. Kristen Nelson. And not only is Dr. Nelson a wonderful vet, but a guest speaker and author of the book, Coated with Fur, A Vet's Life. Dr. Nelson, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Oh, thank you.
Dr. Nelson, I have to ask you, did you always want to become a veterinarian since you were a child?
Yes, ever since I was little. I was 4 years old when I first remember going to the vet with my little poodle. And Dr. Anderson was so nice. He let me hold the dog, even though he didn't really need my help. And then after the exam, he let me look around and back and, you know, see all the little animals that were there for surgery or whatnot. And when I left the hospital that day, I told my mom I was going to be a vet just like him.
That's amazing. And was it a difficult path, Dr. Nelson, to get where you are today?
Well, it requires a lot of hard work, but anything that you want to do requires, you know, hard work to really make it. The thing I would tell people is if that's what you really want to do, don't listen to the people who will discourage you. Because even though I was successful in school, my counselors would tell me you're never going to make it, it doesn't happen. And even though we had a clinic in town that had gotten three other students into veterinary school because of their experience, they still said you're never going to make it. So I would encourage people, if that's your dream, go for it. Don't let anyone talk you out of it.
And it's interesting, Dr. Nelson, that you just mentioned about the clinic in your town. Do you suggest to young students out there who want to do what you do that they do, you know, sort of, you know, for lack of a better word, become an intern at a clinic to really see the ins and outs of what you do every day?
Oh, absolutely. The experience will help you gain entrance into the program, and then also you want to make sure that that's really what you want to do for the rest of your life before you commit, you know, 8 years of schooling or more and all the financial resources it takes.
Can I ask you how it works in the States? You know, because I know you're based in Arizona right now, Dr. Nelson. Mm-hmm. Where did you grow up and where did you end up going to vet school? Because I know where we're based in Canada, there's only a few options for people to go to vet school here. So was it like a difficult entrance to get into it to begin with?
Yes, it's just as difficult as in Canada. And some of my, actually my classmates did their residencies in Canadian veterinary schools. So we're all kind of the same, basically, but there's not every state has a veterinary school, but I was lucky to grow up in Minnesota where we did have one, and that was my best chance of getting in. So for my undergrad, I went to another school out of state just because I wanted to see the country, but then that was the main place I applied when it was time to get in.
And I have to ask you, because I'm not sure exactly how it works when you guys are picking your specialty. Do you focus mainly on the smaller animals, Dr. Nelson, or did you also have to treat large farm animals as well?
In school, they taught us everything for the first 3 years. We did surgery. In our surgery labs, we worked on dogs and cats and horses and cows and pigs and sheep. But then your senior year, they let you choose a little more. It's gotten a little more specialized since I was in school, but some of the people have specialized too much. They have trouble with the state boards. They do a lot better if you have more of a general education. And so most veterinarians, after they finish their 4 years of vet school, then they'll go on to do an internship just with the species that they're most interested in.
Okay. And where does your interest mainly lie, Dr. Nelson?
Well, I thought I'd be an equine practitioner, But I eventually decided to switch to small animals because I felt like I could do more there. A lot of times, I grew up on a farm, and a lot of times the farmers couldn't afford to treat the cow because it was too expensive compared to what they would, you know, make in milk production or meat or whatever. So I chose to go small animal exotics. And so I did my internship at Animal Medical Center in New York City.
And when you speak about the exotic animals, what does that entail?
Well, I used to do kind of everything. I've helped with surgery on an orangutan and scoping cheetahs and all kinds of crazy critters. I've even explored a red panda. But in private practice, it's primarily reptiles, your rabbits, rats, rodents, parrots, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay. And with regards to, you know, those type of animals like the rats and the ferrets and the reptiles, is that difficult, Dr. Nelson? It sounds like it's dangerous.
Some of them are. Most of them are really nice, but I try not to do the really large reptiles anymore because I've had some close calls with them. In fact, one, when I was an intern, my chief of the service was grabbing this water monitor, and she missed her grab by just a little bit, and the thing was able to turn his head around and grabbed her right on the digital artery in your wrist.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, she started bleeding out, and the thing wouldn't let go, and that's kind of common in reptiles. So if you're going to work with them, you really need to know how to dislodge them.
Wow.
So, I poured a whole bottle of rubbing alcohol into this thing's mouth because usually that makes him let go. He wouldn't. He was just still clinging onto it. So then I tourniqueted her arm, and then we actually submerged her wrist with the water monitor attached into the water, and she told me he would either let go or die within like 40 minutes. And he was smart. He let go at 20 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
But it was quite the scene. And then, you know, of course, she's bleeding, and the paramedics show up, and they refuse to go in and help her because the scene isn't secure because the lizard is still on her arm.
Oh, my goodness.
I shouldn't laugh, but, you know, in retrospect, since it all worked out okay and she was fine. But after that, I just, you know, wasn't as comfortable. And then in treating some of the really large snakes, especially the pythons, they can be pretty aggressive. So I try not to do as much of the large reptiles anymore.
And with regards to where you live right now, Dr. Nelson, in Arizona, do you have a lot of those? You know, because I'm assuming it's a dry climate, obviously. Well, I know that. So is there a lot of citizens that would be owning snakes down there?
Oh, yeah. Snakes are popular all over. Yeah, but I won't do any venomous animals because I just, you know, if you're going to work on venomous animals, you need to have a special setup in your clinic with venomous animal alarms and, you know, all the antidotes and all of that. So I just don't do those because we have a lot of rattlesnakes down here.
Okay. Joining us on the show right now is Dr. Kristen Nelson, a veterinarian, guest speaker, and author of Coated with Fur, A Vet's Life. Make sure to check her out at www.veterinarycreative.com. Dr. Nelson, I wanted to, I'm going to actually sort of switch gears for a second, but I do want to come back to speaking about exotic animals. But a question I had for you is with regards to your book, why did you decide to write it? Is it because of all these anecdotes that you've picked up over the years?
Exactly. I wanted to honor these wonderful animals that touched my heart, and I thought the best way to do it was with a book. And then also I've tried to embed facts in the book that will hopefully not slow down the reader, but will help people take better care of their pets. So, for example, there's a common thing that happens is people have cats who get idiopathic cystitis, which that happens. They start to urinate all over the house. And these poor cats, we put them on a special diet, which is low in ash, magnesium, and phosphorus, and a lot of times that'll help prevent recurrence of this syndrome. But people get confused when they go to their groceries and they see these, you know, diets advertised that say formulated for urinary health. Well, it's not the same as the prescription diet you get from your veterinarian. They switch them over to save money, and then the cat recurs. And then they have to come in and pay to have all the treatments done. So that's kind of, you know, I try to embed some of those things in the book that will help people avoid those mistakes.
And as you were writing the book, Dr. Nelson, was it sort of, I don't even want to say the word cathartic, but just the fact that you've been in your field for a fair amount of time, and was it sort of eye-opening as you were writing down all these stories to realize how many things you've actually seen in your years of practice?
It was fun to remember all the wonderful animals because you know, after a while, you, it's not that you ever forget them, but they're not at the front of your memory. And so I was writing a section about this wonderful little gerbil named Chewy, who unfortunately ended up dying of bone cancer. But she had such a special relationship with her little owner. It was a young boy, and I'll never forget when he brought her in, and unfortunately it was the end. The cancer had spread to her lungs, and we were going to have to euthanize her. She, with all her might, reached up and kissed him on the cheek like she had done when she was healthy.
Wow,
and
that's amazing.
It was some of those things that, you know, really touched me again. I mean, I didn't really, you know, didn't forget them, but they just really just touched my heart.
As you were speaking about, you know, that specific story, again, working with these smaller animals, I was wondering, because I can tell in your voice that you have a huge affinity for not just the dogs and the cats, but these little gerbils and you know, probably even the rats that you treat. Can you maybe put to rest some thoughts that maybe people would have about, you know, these little critters that aren't cats and dogs? Because I think a lot of people, you know, would run the other way at a quick pace, you know, with anything to do with regards to a snake or even a gerbil. I think that freaks out people. What's been your experience with them? Like, I know this story in itself just shows that they do have feelings.
Oh, they all have little personalities. It's just that we don't take the time to observe them and get to know them. Even iguanas. There was one iguana named Deidre who just hated my guts. She loved everyone else, and she hated me. And the minute the owners lifted the lid off her carrier, she would come at me with her tail slashing, and she hated me.
Wow.
And everyone else was great. And you know, like iguanas, in my experience, their purple is their favorite color.
Okay.
You know, and so everyone has their personality. I just think that sometimes we don't get to know them. Like 2 years ago, I worked on a desert tortoise that it had been abandoned in the big foreclosure mess. And she, two pit bulls had got a hold of her and chewed up her shell pretty bad. So I did surgery and fixed her up, and she had to hang out in the hospital for quite a while. And she was the most social tortoise. She, when I had her in her cage, she would come to the front and hang out with both feet in her head.
Wow.
Just so people would pet her when they walked by.
That's so cool. And just with regards to speaking about these, you know, exotic pets, Dr. Nelson, what do you say to people, you know, because obviously you've met owners of these exotic pets who take good care of them. But again, I think there's members of the public who, you know, see something on the Discovery Channel and think, you know, they should own a python or whatever. What do you say to people who want to go the exotic route but haven't really looked into it?
Looking into it is key, as you said. They really need to know what they're getting into, because the exotics are usually more expensive to care for, than they require more time. Sometimes you have to have licenses depending on where you're living. And some of these exotics, like the parrots, they can live 60 years. So you have to make plans for them, you know, well into the future. So whether it's a dog or a cat or, you know, whatever species you're talking about, you really need to plan for, you know, what's going to happen in case you're not there. And it's especially important. I really like to see older people have pets, because it seems to improve their health as well as the pets. But it's important to make plans for them in the future.
And with regards to elderly members, you know, of the society, Dr. Nelson, what sort of pets should they be having? And also, I guess it's a two-part question, you know, because a lot of elderly people, as we know, are alone. And so I could see why they would, you know, want or need the companionship. What types of animals should they have? Should they even go the exotic route? And, you know, should a family member or friend be picking this out for them, or actually taking the elderly person to go pick a pet? Because it just seems like this could be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I don't recommend many of the exotic animals for either very young or very old, just because a lot of the reptiles secrete salmonella in their feces, and we can't clear them of it. That's just part of their normal gut flora. So if anyone's going to be immunosuppressed, which usually these age groups are, I wouldn't recommend it. So I'd stick with your more traditional pets. As far as dogs and cats go, I would really recommend that they get a mature dog or cat, not a kitten or a puppy, because usually, you know, an older person doesn't have the energy or perhaps the health to go through all the training phases. And then for anyone, when you're picking out a pet, there's just this bond that happens between you and the animal when you see the right one. And so I'm not an advocate of picking out animals for other people. I really think you can go with, and, you know, if you want to help pay for expenses, that's great. But as far as the actual emotional connection, you know, that's going to happen between the person and the pet. So I always try to let them be the one to pick out the pet.
And with regards as well, just sort of heading back to your book for a second, Dr. Nelson, after you, you know, wrote the book, I'm assuming, because anytime I've ever interviewed an author, no matter what subject they've been writing about, it seems that, you know, inevitably they learn something more than they thought they would after they've written the book. So did you have some sort of big epiphany, or not even maybe a big one, but just something that, like, wow, that caught you off guard after you actually wrote your book?
Well, I think when I was actually in the practice, I was so busy, I didn't really get to cherish the pets as much as I did while I was writing about them and some of the experiences. I had one client who his dog, huge Doberman named Ivan, who was just handsome boy. And I was trying to get a semen sample on him, and I just was striking out. He just didn't care for me. And one day, he was coming to the clinic for me to try yet again, and his owner had him walk in carrying a bouquet of roses in his mouth.
Nice. That's awesome.
So there were lots of, you know, really cute things that happened that at the time, you know, of course we laughed and about it, but you didn't really treasure it like I was able to when I wrote the book.
Okay, so that's amazing. So hindsight, again, you know, sort of exciting there. And mm-hmm. Where can people get a copy of your book, Dr. Nelson?
It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and independent bookstores across both Canada and the U.S. Can order it.
That's amazing. Dr. Nelson, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure.
That's Dr. Kristen Nelson, a veterinarian, guest speaker, and author of Coated with Fur, A Vet's Life. And again, make sure to check out Dr. Nelson on her website, www.veterinarycreative.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
There's never a dull moment when it comes to the world of all things media. Take a listen.
The final snap of Super Bowl 45. The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy is coming home.
Packers fans celebrating a 31-25 Super Bowl win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Green Bay's Jordy Nelson started the scoring with a 29-yard touchdown pass. He says you have to dream big.
I guarantee there's kids all over the country playing in the backyard, emulating some game-winning catch in the Super Bowl, but, I mean, it was such a long shot, I couldn't believe it. I just taken it year by year, done what the coaches asked, and a lot of thanks to a lot of people, and it's great to be here.
Green Bay quarterback Aaron Rodgers is the game's MVP.
Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight? What so proudly we watched at the twilight's last gleaming.
It's official. Yesterday's Super Bowl was the most watched TV program in history. Take that, soccer. Take that, moon landing.
People who are against the moon landing? How can you be against it? Finally, someone say something about the moon landing. Ridiculous thing to be against. I'm angry about the moon landing. Let it go, man. It was a long time ago. Anyway, congratulations to the Green Bay Packers who beat the Steelers 31-25. Now, it shouldn't have been that close, but Green Bay receivers dropped 8 passes. Now, football fans haven't seen that many mishandled balls since texts from Brett Favre.
You're in a different situation now that a felony has been filed against you. If you violate the law, I will remand you and set no bail. And your attorney won't be successful this time on the habeas petition that they ran before, because a felony is a different situation and you're not entitled to bail. So what I'm telling you is you need to follow the laws just like everybody else. Look around this room. Everyone in this room has to follow the law. You're no different than anyone else. So please don't push your luck.
More anti-government protests in Egypt, this one in the northern city of Alexandria. Farmers setting fires in one southern province, with thousands of state workers going out on strike. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs saying,
an orderly transition must begin now, and it must produce without delay immediate and irreversible progress.
Bring on the remix.
Mariah Carey with I Wanna Know What Love Is, remixed by Cutmore on The Kelly Alexander Show. We also featured songs from Bill Withers, Grandma's Hands, and from Ella Fitzgerald, My Funny Valentine. Thank you so much to my guests this week, Eve Thomas and Dr. Kristen Nelson. They were so much fun to hang out with. And again, if you want to read that book from Dr. Nelson, it's amazing. And you can learn more about her at veterinarycreative.com. And again, her book is available on Amazon. It's called Coated with Fur, A Vet's Life. As you know, I try to leave you in a positive frame of mind for the week. And so before I go, here is a quote from a very funny actress and an all-around great gal, even though I don't know her personally, but I think she would be very fun to be friends with, Miss Goldie Hawn. She says, quote, "The only thing that will make you happy is being happy with who you are and not who people think you are," end quote. Again, from Goldie Hawn. If you have any comments or questions, always appreciate it. Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com. And just to sort of put this in your head, we had such a great time with Dr. Nelson that we're going to invite her back on the show in the next little while. So if you have any, pet care questions for her, she says she loves to help out with answers for concerns that you would have, you know, to take care of your lovely furry one at your home. So any questions, just send them on to me, and then we're going to have her back on the show again. So Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great week, and you and I will chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.
This is the son of PCJJ.